Hello everyone. Today we welcome Dr. Danilo Turk, formerly President of the Republic of Slovenia, currently Chairman of the United Nations High-Level Panel on Water and Peace. That panel produced in 2017 a remarkable document titled A Matter of Survival, calling for much higher levels of international cooperation around the intersects of water challenges and human conflict. Danilo Turk, do you see an increase in such international cooperation in recent years? Are things getting better or worse?
Well, both. I think at the level of actual reality, things are certainly not getting better because the climate change produces a number of phenomena which are expressed in water, severe droughts, water disasters, and the world has to be worried about these tendencies. On the other hand, the discussion at the international level has shown more sensitivity towards water issues recently. The creation of our panel on water and peace is part of that growing sensitivity. It was initiated by 15 UN member states. It produced a report in 2017. That report was well received in the United Nations and elsewhere. And we have seen that also in one of the major strategic directions of the UN, that is in the Sustainable Development Goals, water issues are gaining higher priority because it is understood that water is fundamental to practically every other Sustainable Development Goal. So that's an indication of the growing awareness. And it is not the only indication. We have seen more interest in water issues in the Security Council of the United Nations. Because water has become a problem during armed conflict, during crisis situations which dominate the agenda of the Security Council, the attacks on water installations, on water infrastructure and water resources have become more frequent and more vicious, especially in Syria most recently, but also before in Darfur we have seen, and in Somalia. So the question of water is more present in the minds of people who are trying to make peace. Now, our philosophy, the philosophy of the high-level panel on water and peace, is the following. Water is a shared resource, therefore it must be subject of cooperation, and as such then it is an instrument of peace. There are 270 or so shared river basins today in the world, but there are less than 90 arrangements that make the transboundary cooperation central to the whole management of water resources. And this just tells you how much more needs to be done internationally to make sure that water cooperation helps maintaining peace, preventing events that lead to armed conflicts, and obviously after armed conflicts, water cooperation arrangements are an important stabilizer of peace. And this is not new. I mean, this has been happening in the world since the Feast of Westphalia. I mean, it's an old concept, but adjusted to the new realities, and that is what we were trying to do.
Our readers and listeners will have heard and listened to reports in recent weeks alone on water-related conflicts in Yemen, Ukraine, Syria. I'm reading this list, I looked them up. But this year, Libya, Iraq, Mali, the Chad Basin. But our readers are somewhat water sophisticated. We don't see reportage of water-related conflict in the mainstream media. Why are they not picking up on this crisis?
One can criticize mainstream media for many reasons. One can also say that mainstream media, or media more generally, are interested in disasters. The famous saying among journalists that if it bleeds, then it leads, is still there. There is clearly a lack of focus on questions which are not the most immediate, most violent events. Water does become a problem when it comes to that point. For example, in the case of Darfur, I think mainstream media have noticed that competition over water was a very important source of the conflict. So you know, that to that extent, the media were aware of the problem, but they leave much to be desired when it comes to broader understanding of water aspects and the importance of water for the future. For example, if we take the war in Syria, I mean, there were very serious water situations on Euphrates, and water cooperation will be an important factor of peace once peace becomes available in Syria. But there is very little attention to that. And if you read the reports that go to the Security Council of the United Nations, you will find references, you will find reporting about this. I mean, the UN Secretariat does understand the problem, but the mainstream media don't, and this is just one of the shortcomings of the media world. You know, nobody's perfect, and media world is certainly not perfect.
Well, in January, the UN Security Council held an open debate about the impact of climate change broadly, not just water, on peace and security, which is encouraging. You've been quoted, Dr. Turk, as saying that the UN is somewhat lagging behind in addressing the intersects between water security and conflict. It does seem that at the United Nations there are multiple agencies associated with water, and perhaps a more coordinated approach would help.
Sure, but let us stay first with the more narrow understanding of the nexus between water and peace. One can clearly discuss the connections, but there are specific geographically defined situations where this is really an important priority. Let us take the Lake Chad area and the fact that Boko Haram and the whole armed conflict situation around it has to do with water scarcity, and that a path to peace would clearly need to involve better water management and involvement of countries in the region for water management. Now, in the follow-up to our report on water and peace, we have organized through the Geneva Water Hub a series of conferences on the Sahel region, water issues in the Sahel, and try to identify the policies that could help simply to stop spreading the conflict and later also to creating a development alternative which would make conflict less likely. I mean, we are not talking about making miracles. Now, our team is going to be in Senegal and will discuss the region there and in other places later this month. We are working closely with the United Nations. I think the United Nations missions do understand the problem, and they would like to develop policies and investment that would curb the spreading of the conflict and later help stabilizing the situation. But that's only one part of the current activity. Too much emphasis is placed on the military side. Now, military protection against attacks is necessary, but given the nature of the armed conflict and the nature of various armed groups, we cannot expect the military approach by the international community alone, that military approach alone will be the solution. It is a necessity, but only part of the solution. And the other part has to do with development and has to do with water. So somebody has to come with projects, with money, with the capacity to work on the ground, and that is the way forward. So the Geneva Water Hub is a good place to organize the necessary analysis and discussion that could help us move in that direction.
And we've reported on some excellent local initiatives. Is there, however, also a global role for the United Nations here? There have been calls for a convention of a UN global conference on water cooperation, bringing leadership focus and a top-down approach as well as the more local approach. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, water is a subject of various UN agencies. Practically all major agencies have something to do with water. And each of them is collecting data, each of them is helping policy advice. There are many activities that are already taking place. I was in my previous capacity, that is before I was president of Slovenia, I worked for the United Nations for several years. I was Assistant Secretary General for Political Affairs. We were placing a lot of emphasis on prevention of armed conflicts and trying to figure out what kind of policies have to be put in place to make prevention more meaningful. Obviously, prevention is one of the philosophical bases of the Charter of the United Nations, so it's not very innovative to talk about prevention. And water cooperation clearly was part of our discussion at that time. Now, of course, as I mentioned before, in the context of Lake Chad and the entire Sahel region, there is a need for a large program that would help in the future. But then one also has to think about the global approach to these questions, not only about the situation-specific, geographically defined approaches. And here again, one can draw some wisdom from the past experience of the United Nations. In 1977, there was a big conference in Mar del Plata, Argentina, that dealt with water and came up with the notion of comprehensive water management, which has helped governments to develop their water policies domestically. One doesn't have to be very kind of far-sighted to see that 40 years later or 45 years later, it would be good to have another global conference. Why would that be useful? I think that we have learned over the years that to coordinate these 32 UN funds, programs and agencies that are addressing water in different ways is difficult to do. And obviously we don't have a very strong institutional mechanism that would ensure better coordination. And it's not, perhaps not even necessary. What I believe personally would be of great help would be another global conference where the Secretary General could come with a well-structured agenda and then invite all parts of the UN system to work on that agenda and develop a more coherent approach in the future. That is possible. As you may know, the General Assembly has declared last year, in 2018, a decade on water action. That was the General Assembly action. All right, there will be various reviews of what has been done so far. I believe that those reviews would allow discussion also on what is to be done in the remainder of the decade and whether one would do something at the global level in addition to whatever needs to be done regionally and in other geographically specific areas. So I believe that moving towards such a global conference which will continue the legacy of Mar del Plata and figure out what is the global governance of water today would be very welcome. That would be an element which is missing and would very well complement all other efforts that exist.
Well, the name of your panel's report was is a matter of survival. That's loaded with urgency. What is your level of optimism about that sort of leadership coming from the United Nations?
Well, I really don't have a definitive view on this because I know a little bit about the United Nations and I know how difficult it is to articulate coherent and effective policy. But I'm not without hope. As I said before, I mean, the Sustainable Development Goals provide a very good platform, something that we didn't have in the United Nations in the past. Now, the Secretary General, as you know, is convening a climate summit this September in 2019. That would be an opportunity to define priorities for the future, and I hope that water will be very much part of that. And then the question is, okay, so what are we going to do about water? What is the role of the United Nations? Now, the United Nations is, of course, an organization of member states. It's an organization of practical activity. It's an organization of emergency response, but it is also a convener of important conferences. We haven't had that for a while now, as far as water is concerned, and it would be good to think about this quite seriously. So, I'm not without hope.
It's notable, talking about hope, it's notable that your panel is titled, or has the remit of Water and Peace. That's its name. It's not Water and Conflict. Can water be harnessed as an instrument for peace, and how can that be done?
Well, look, in our report we have discussed water in armed conflicts as well. We have a separate chapter on this. We call for a more effective implementation of international humanitarian law, which does protect civilian population, it does protect access to water, it does protect water installations and water resources, and prohibits use of water as a weapon. So, I mean, we have a platform there, and we have, you know, developed that further and also made recommendations to the Security Council and others. So we are not oblivious of that side. But the major part of the report is really about instruments for making water as a tool of peace. And there are several things there. First, there is the transboundary water cooperation, something that has been well established in practice of states, but it is not sufficiently developed everywhere in the world. So there is much to be done in further expanding transboundary water cooperation and looking towards good examples that do exist. And some of them are not in the most developed part of the world. I mean, I would like to quote the Senegal River Arrangement, which binds African countries, Guinea, Senegal, Mali and Mauritania, and which has proven to be an extremely sophisticated mechanism which builds on the idea of shared resources of the Senegal River, and is done in a way which allows an independent institution, an international institution, to take care of development of that resource, including through obtaining financial means for various projects and so forth. So what I'm trying to say is there are many examples in various parts of the world that could be studied and could inspire. Then, of course, there are mechanisms that could be developed domestically, because much of water tensions happen as a result of competition over water resources between different sectors, such as agriculture, energy production, then obviously fishing, and using water as a resource for survival of people. You know, all these things have to be managed. Again, national policies, national management is important, water governance is the key. But then again, in conflict situations or in tensions, it is important to have instruments in place that would allow all the stakeholders to negotiate and to come to solutions. It doesn't work well everywhere, but we have seen, for example, in Costa Rica, where our panel went to discuss this kind of questions, that sometimes mobilization of civil societies and the wise attitude of the government based on solid scientific research can help finding solutions which help everybody. So perhaps a little less energy, a little more environmental protection, a little less water needed for unsophisticated agricultural uses, and better use of technologies which already exist. All this has to be made available. And all these are instruments of strengthening stability, social cohesion, and indirectly, of course, preventing any sort of tension and conflict.
So we should all be water diplomats?
Well, look, water diplomacy should be really much more understood than it is so far. Now, I am encouraged, and I would like to say also a little amused by the fact that European Union adopted a set of conclusions at the level of European Council on water diplomacy. And the document is crafted in a manner which would allow precisely what you are saying. Everybody could be a water diplomat. I mean, obviously, one has to have a wise government, one has to have solid scientific basis for what is being done, one has to understand water. It's not, you know, water is not a simple phenomenon which everybody understands. You know, there has to be an understanding, there has to be enough of goodwill to engage everybody who has a legitimate interest over water. It's not to give always priority to, you know, profit or to the most obvious economic considerations. So if you look into all these aspects, then you're absolutely right. Yes, sure, water diplomacy is for everybody. In my country, in Slovenia, the government just took a decision not to build a hydropower plant on one of the rivers on the flat part of Slovenia, where, you know, when the water flow is slow and the environment, the whole habitat around that river is really very fragile and very special, and biodiversity is a very important factor and everything else. The government went with the environmental argument against the argument of the electricity system in our country. You see, you know, things can lead to different outcomes depending on all factors that have to be involved. And I can tell you, there were thousands of water diplomats involved. I mean, you know, this water diplomacy is not for men in pinstriped suits. It's for many people who are really vitally interested and have legitimate concerns.
Daniel O'Turk, thank you so much for your time and for joining us today. Perhaps we can talk again and catch up on future developments in water diplomacy.
Well, it will be my pleasure. I would like to share with you a bit of a personal history. See, my late father-in-law was a hydrogeologist, and unfortunately he passed away before I became involved in water discussions. But I remember our many discussions in the past, his work in Slovenia, in the whole of former Yugoslavia, where water hydrogeology was an important factor. He also worked in the Sudan and in other parts of Africa. So I have a little bit of family history related to this, and perhaps that has helped me to really focus on this issue now. And I hope that in the coming years we'll make some progress.
Thank you, Dr. Turk.
My pleasure.